Today's episode of The Wretched Hive is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to The Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
Happy 1 year anniversary, my friends. That's right. This week, 1 year ago, we launched this here podcast, the Wretched Hive Podcast. Today's episode is Friday, January 20th, 2017, episode 28. And it was 1 year ago this week, guys, that we debuted the show. And what a pleasure it has been to do this for an entire year with you guys. I am thrilled that we've made it to this point and that we got past 2016. We're launching into 2017 with some fire and keep this momentum going in the Star Wars universe. We are not slowing down, and neither are the people making awesome, high-quality Star Wars films. And we have a lot to talk about this week on The Wretched Hive, and joining me tonight, as always, my bearded Wookiee co-pilot, Greg Lent.
More bearded than normal this week. The beard is getting a little out of control, but I'm very, very happy to be here on this very, very special episode of The Wretched Hive, where we teach all the kids in the land not to do drugs, to be good to your parents, to respect your elders, and to always let the Wookiee win.
The beard is looking rather robust, actually.
It really is.
Yeah, it's really coming in.
I'm compensating for the lack of hair on the top of my dome by growing hair on my chin.
That's all migrated down, and it looks great.
You are getting a little grizzly looking there. Grizzly Adams, my friend.
Thank you.
You just heard him. We also are joined by lifelong Star Wars fan Scotty Vansky.
Woo! Thank you, Steve. It is 1 year and feeling damn good.
That was a fast year, wasn't it?
It was. Doing this stuff is so much fun. I can't tell you. I look forward to it all the time. In fact, the time that we did the whatever quick back-to-back episodes over the holidays, I've been missing it. I'm glad we're back. I'm glad we're doing this. It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah,
it feels like it's been a bit of a long break. It does. I mean, Scott and I were catching up a little bit a couple weeks ago, and repeatedly, we're recording this week, right? Mm. No, Scott, not this week. One more week, buddy. Hang in there. We all hung in there, and here we are back again.
Yeah, no doubt. We recorded those back-to-back shows, and then we took a 3-week break from recording.
Yes.
Although we released a show on time, we recorded it early, so it feels great to be back and get back on schedule with this thing.
It does. I was missing it. I was actually recording little mini podcasts on my phone, but I will not release those tapes. They are going into the vault, and like Disney, you won't see them for a good 20, 30 years.
You hear a lot of this on them. It's just a lot of...
Star Wars! Yes!
We'll release it as special edition. Sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, it just sounds unnecessarily dirty to me is all I was going to say.
I can't imagine why that would sound unnecessarily dirty to you. What?
Hey, Steve, who was that voice that we just heard?
That would be, of course, Dave! Under no circumstances should you ever...
Oh, God, don't do it.
Ever!
I really mean it, never.
Call him...
Dirty.
Harry Potter.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Happy 2017. January 20th, 2017, a day that will live in infamy, I am sure. Mm. But Steve,
Is something going on today? Something happening today?
Something is happening today.
You mean we released our anniversary show? You mean the anniversary show?
Yes, that was it. That was it. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, there is something though, and Steve, I know you hate this, but I'm sorry. I got to do it. This is too important.
Okay.
It's not in the show notes. I got to hijack the show right out of the gate real quick because there is something that happened actually this week on the day that we're recording it that I know is very, very important to one of my fellow Wretched Hive co-hosts. And I have to take a moment. I think we all need to pause to acknowledge this, that this is the 1 year anniversary of the death of legendary musician Glenn Frey. And I know Mr. Lent, this is a momentous hard day for you. And I just want to let you know that we're all here. I'm confident speaking on behalf of all of my co-hosts. We are all here for you, my friend.
Oh, wow. The heat is on, bitches. The heat is on.
So, Greg, do you spend your day today watching YouTube videos of Glenn Frey or dissecting the President Trump's inauguration?
Here's my plan. I'm gonna wake up. I'm gonna drink a beer.
There you go. Oh, sorry. There you go.
Why are you giving me choices?
I don't know.
I don't understand. Stop it. Stop giving
choices?
Me choices. All right. I'm going to drink a beer. Then I'm going to drink another beer. And then I'm going to hit my third beer. And I might have to pee about this time, but no. I'm going to hold it, and I'm going to drink another beer. I'm going to find out where that fucker is buried, and I'm going to piss all over his dirty, hairy grave.
Wow, this just got... just dark, man.
Wow.
Woo. I'm going to pour one out, so to speak, for my homie.
How do you really feel about him? My God.
So you're going to grave filter one out for him. That's what I'm saying. Man.
Well, it's appropriate that on Trump's inauguration, somebody gets a golden shower.
Hey. Oh! We got a joke.
Oh man!
I forgot that one, sir.
Unverified, unconfirmed at this time.
It sounds like a lot of you are in. Are you in? You in? You're in. You're in. God.
Hashtag RIP Glenn Frey. Hashtag no hard feelings.
Well, if you want to share your feelings about the passing of Glenn Frey, you can do so on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. You can also leave us a voicemail, and very good chance it'll get played on the air. That number is 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And guys, we did get a very nice message from a listener, Brad Chowin, or Chowin. I'm not sure how you...
I was hoping it was from Nico Rodriguez. It would be nice to hear from him in the new year. But
oh my God, I didn't even introduce or acknowledge that Nico wasn't on the show tonight. Wow.
You are going to get the Glenn Frey special.
Do I want the Glenn Frey special or the Donald Trump special? I don't know. So you too.
Right.
So Brad Chowin sent us a message on via Facebook Messenger, and he said that he listens to multiple Star Wars podcasts. I think he said six. I don't have the message up in front of me. I'm just remembering this, but he says he listens to many Star Wars podcasts. He says we are his second favorite, behind Rebel Force Radio.
Wow.
That's some high praise.
That is some high praise, considering they are the godfathers, really, of Star Wars podcasting.
I'm not even sure this is my second favorite podcast behind Rebel Force Radio. So
you're on it. Well, you know what? I'm going to raise a toast to Mr. Brad.
Brad.
Thank you, sir.
Click the mic.
Let's give a plug to his podcast because he's quite entertaining too for the dirty fucker that he is. So
he is. Yes, actually. Hang on. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, get it together, Ivansky.
We run a tight ship here. Can you tell?
We spare no expense in our production values.
We spare no expense.
Sorry. Now, do you have his podcast? We really should plug this for him.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah, because Brad is a nice guy. He has given us a shout out on his show a time or two, and he's sending us a nice message. So I think we really should let our fans know about Brad's show. And Scott, I'll sit here and tap dance while you find that.
Okay.
And Brad is always one to chime in on our Facebook page. You can see he's a frequent commenter there. Mm-hmm. With always good things to say.
Yes.
As you can also find that on his podcast that is called.
I just wanted to make sure I had it up because one, Brad, your podcast page is an unbelievably long title, which I absolutely love, and I wanted to make sure I got it exactly right. But it is the super fantastic, terrific page of movies, TV, and entertainment. Podcast.
Wow.
Okay.
That's a mouthful.
That is.
That's...
It is actually fantastic. I'm trying to remember the episode I just listened to. I've been so caught up with a few other things here, but it was so wonderful. I think he was talking about Stranger Things. Was that the one I was just listening to?
Hmm. Well, he actually mentioned to us, and that's how we found out about this... Well, our first story, I don't want to bury the lead here, but he told us about this Star Girls burlesque show that was taking place, and that he was going to also be on a Star Wars podcast, or he was going to do a Star Wars versus Star Trek podcast early in the year. He came down with laryngitis and was unable to do it. So he's been posting quite a bit on our page, and we thank him for that. And so what was the name of that podcast again, Scott?
That is the super fantastic, terrific page of movies, TV, and entertainment podcast.
Awesome.
You can find them on Facebook. They have their own website, which is at superfantasticterrific.com.
Superfantasticterrific.com. Perfect.
It makes me happy to know, Ann, that somebody likes this show other than the five of us, though.
They have a wonderful segment going on right now, or actually before Brad came down with, I believe, laryngitis, dealing with Piegate, something about a pumpkin pie that was a year or two old, and they all decided to try this pie. I don't know why, but it's some good, good entertainment. Please listen to their show.
Ugh.
Good deal.
I'm looking at a picture. I don't know if these are pictures of the pies that they actually ate, but one of them, I love me pumpkin pie. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a good pumpkin pie. And this picture, one of them looks okay. The other does not look like a good pumpkin pie.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. that's the year or 2 year old pie that they ate, which unbelievable. But listen to the actual podcast and you'll find out some unbelievably entertaining pie facts. Mm.
Good people. Yep. Excellent work, guys. Keep it up.
Yes.
All right. So before we get into Star Wars news, we do have some Wretched Hive news. The Wretched Hive, a couple of the Hivians, took a little field trip. And we went down to downtown Long Beach.
The LBC?
Yeah.
I didn't realize we were this hardcore.
Oh yeah, no, we took a road trip. We did some remote reporting from the Star Girls burlesque show.
It sounds a lot like Scott's solo podcast, by the way.
it did sound a little bit like that, and it was a little bit disturbing.
You can find me at Burlesque Boobies and Booze, your friend Scott.
But basically what this was Scott, what was the name of the club where this took place?
Oh, this is Harvell's in downtown Long Beach.
Right next to Congregation Ale House.
Yes. Great location. It's actually right near, if you're familiar with the Long Beach area, the club right above it used to be the Blue Cafe. And it is a fantastic club. Harvell's is wonderful.
Whoa, wait a minute. Hold up for just a second. Are you telling me the Blue Cafe closed?
Yeah, it's not there, my friend.
Oh, that makes me sad.
It's very sad. But however, Harvell's is a wonderful place. It's down in a basement. below the Congregation. Is that what it's called, Steve?
Yeah,
the
Congregation Ale House. It's a beer joint with, you know, like gastropub kind of a place right next door.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they do everything. They actually do specialize in regular burlesque shows. This was a special one with the Star Girls coming down from L.A. to do this show. But they also do comedy acts, and they do live performances, which we've seen a guy's a mutual friend of ours, Sammy, play one of his bands there.
That's right. Yes, I remember being there. That's a really killer bar, actually.
It is.
Really killer bar. Yep. Yeah, I have been there.
It kind of has kind of a speakeasy feel because you go downstairs and it's real dark. You kind of have to find the entrance. You know, you go around a corner in the stairwell and you go downstairs, and it was really cool.
Yeah, fun place.
So we do have a clip. This is exclusive footage here provided by the Wretched Hive.
Oh,
and this is the host of the show. This is the lady of the night, if you will. And her name is Scarlett. Well, actually, I'm going to let her tell you.
I am, in fact, Scarlett. Oh, yes. As my friends call me, Darth Sensuous.
Darth Sensuous was the hostess that night, and she lovely young lady, was introducing the burlesque performers. And Scott and I went down there. Scott took lots of pictures. Some of them are on our Facebook page. You can check it out at again, facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast. Scott, what's the memory that you take away from that night that stands out in your mind?
Probably the music,
in the ambiance.
Big music fan, huge music fan. I do want to clarify something real quick. There seems to be a little bit of a link issue, which I will fix on our Wretched Hive podcast page, Facebook page. I will have the actual album up, so you don't have to click on the individual photos, which as of right now, I think there's about 19, 20 photos. I'll have a few more up, so you'll have a good dozen, two dozen or three dozen up there. Memories of that night. Wow. Well, very interesting. Yes, I'm going to bring up the music first. What a wonderful choice of musical selections to see these girls dance to. And they didn't just dance. They actually performed. There was a very vaudeville style technique to a few of them. Some of them actually had, one of them played violin. Well, somewhat. There was some technical difficulties there. And a lot of them just had a really good sense of humor about what they were doing. I was a little, there was one thing I was disappointed about. Going to a burlesque show that's primarily about Star Wars characters, there was no Slave Leia. That really got to me. Now, I can't even say to be fair on this, because Steve, you and I were there. We didn't see the second show, which was the 11 p.m. showing. I don't know if they switched up performers and if there was one there, but I have seen on their website that they actually do have a Slave Leia. Also, Boba Fett, for all you Boba Fett fans out there. Why we didn't see a Boba Fett striptease, I don't know. But other than that, it was great. It was wonderful.
We did have a Lando, though.
Yeah, I was ready to go on this one, Steve.
No, she was awesome. What are you talking about? That girl had talent oozing out of every pore. She was so good. Attitude. You know, if you've never seen burlesque, let me just...
I'm sorry. That wasn't talent oozing out of those pores.
Let me just say...
You beat me to it, Greg.
Let me just set the stage a little bit. If burlesque is not exactly like a... It's not a stripping situation, right? It's not like a stripper where she's like dancing to music and stripping. There are clothes being removed, but it's sort of like, it's more like performance art. Now they come out, they dance, they do a little Star Wars thing. Some of them had a lightsaber and, you know, they're taking it off and the crowd is hooting and hollering and everything, but you know, they're there to perform. And, as Scott mentioned, at least one of the girls actually brought out a musical instrument and was, you know, played it on stage. So it was like, it was a performance art. It was really cool. And you know, they're dressed as Star Wars characters. And one came out completely dressed like Lando, like looked like a guy and came out
completely with mustache and everything.
It was awesome.
You will find that in the photo album, so please check it out if you'd like on our Wretched Hive podcast Facebook page. But I will say it was a lot of fun, and you're right. It is performance dance altogether. I've watched a few burlesque shows in my time, and I will say they did a fantastic job. I feel the Lando lady did a great job. I don't remember her name. I tried to get everyone's name before we recorded this podcast, but I haven't heard back from the Devil's Burlesque show. They haven't answered me yet, but I did send them our information, so they'll hopefully be listening to this. I don't know, something about she really did look like a very thinned down version of Lando, and that kind of was a little spooky for me.
Well, you know, we had there was one young lady that had like the Marilyn Monroe look. And there was one that you would recognize from
Tiki Oasis.
Yeah, what was her name? Do you remember
Jezebel Thunder? I do remember her.
Jezebel Thunder. Yeah, she came out with the like a stormtrooper or a death trooper sort of look, right?
She had the Finn helmet, the stormtrooper helmet with the blood hand marks.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, she is a very well-known burlesque dancer. I think in the LA area, but she does make it down to San Diego and I think Las Vegas for a few big events. We saw her last year actually perform. Another Hyvian member, I'm going to call you out, Greg. I see you ignoring me, Mr. Beard.
No, yeah, you and I, and along with our respective wretched wives, went down to San Diego to the Tiki Oasis in, was that August of last year? That was August of last year, right around Miss Karen's birthday. And it was fantastic. Super fun time. If you're in the San Diego area and on a specific weekend in August, get down to Tiki Oasis. You will not regret it at all. Be prepared to stay up for about 48 hours straight, but you will not regret it.
Yes.
Now I do have one additional clip. Miss Scarlet Orgasm, a.k.a. Darth Sensuous, had some instructions and some advice for the audience.
Yes, and I'll be your host for the evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you may have heard our little boy toy, Bobby Burlesque, who we love. But you may have heard Bobby Burlesque tell you that there are rules here at the Devil's Playground. No, 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 ladies and gentlemen, there are no rules at the Devil's Playground. No, we want you to be on your worst behavior. We want you to hoot. We want you to holler. We want you to flirt. We want you to squirt. Not on me, just on each other.
So, some guidance from Darth Sensuous. That led us into
that was the evening. What did she call it? The splash zone?
Yes. I believe she did refer to the front row as the splash zone. Yes.
Meow.
Oh, good times.
Well, good times. Lots of fun. Scott, I'm glad we went and did that. And, you know, it's all in the name of show prep and Star Wars research.
Can I say I'll never look at a lightsaber the same way again?
There you go.
And now to the wretched wives, Mrs. Evansky and Mrs. Baldwin, for further comment.
Let's get into some Rogue One instead. How about that?
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
Resistance fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Rogue One Reconnaissance. Roger, stand one round of elimination. Stand by.
I'm sorry, were you saying something over the over the, because it's blaringly loud in my headphones. I couldn't hear
it. It has an 11.
It's weird. I can barely hear it on my end over here.
Yeah.
Like, is that right?
I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's something going on with my. Could you guys hear Scarlet Orgasm? Okay.
Yeah.
Could hear her, but even the first intro was really low to me.
Huh. Okay. How do I sound?
You're fine. You sound a little tinny, though.
Like, yeah, a little scratchy or tinny.
Is that right?
Mm. I think you sound sexy. Mm.
Some people pay extra for that.
Mm. Yeah. My Darth Sensuous is what you are.
You kind of got that old-timey radio host. Shay? You know what I'm talking about, Shay?
Let's talk about some Rogue Runs, eh? Well,
it's time for baseball.
We do have a couple of Rogue One stories. You know, there is still a movie out in the theaters, a new Star Wars, guys. Rogue One. Have you heard of it?
What?
Yeah.
When the hell did this happen?
Yep.
We've been doing this show for a year. Why haven't we been talking about this, Steve?
We really need to talk about this.
We did two episodes on it. I think you guys were all drunk.
Oh.
But
that sounds about right.
This past week, actually, Rogue One became the highest grossing movie of 2016.
Last week was 2017.
Its box office totals count to the 2016 because it was released in 2016.
Thank you, counselor. Perfect.
Math is hard.
I think that's a loophole that needs to be closed.
Well, I'm sure in the new Trump administration they will get right on that, Greg.
Now, wait a minute. So does that mean The Force Awakens was actually the highest grossing movie of 2016? Because even though that movie came out in 2015, it made a shit ton of money in 2016. So you know, how does this boat operate? How do we drive this thing?
It is a little weird, but because it came out in 2015, all of its box office totals, all of its revenue earned, count towards 2015 lists, which is why I think when you go to Box Office Guru, it's actually not listed as the highest grossing movie for Martin Luther King Day weekend, even though it was, because that was its like fourth or fifth week of release.
It's listed as the highest grossing weekend the weekend only.
Yeah.
For the totals for 2016.
Yes.
Okay, I am never getting into a car with Greg.
So if somebody releases Avatar, say this weekend, then I'm going to show it.
They would probably get in trouble with James Cameron if they did that.
Let's say I got permission, and so I show it in my backyard, and I charge $5, you know, to show it in my backyard, and like three people show up because there's probably like three people who haven't seen Avatar and say, "Hey, I'd like to see that movie in Greg's backyard. That sounds like a lot of fun." So they show up. Does that make it the highest grossing movie of 2017 because it made like a bazillion dollars in 1999 or whatever the fuck it came out?
No, it means that you probably lost money on the deal because you would have paid a lot more than $15 for the rights to show it in your backyard.
I agree to disagree.
I don't make the rules, Mr. Lent. I just interpret them. I'm not actually advocating them as sensical or anything like that.
Okay, Plagius. You just settle down there, Sparky.
Rogue One has made $503 million.
What's that?
Dollars. Lifetime growth. 2016, $503 million, $500 million, guys.
And that's just in the U.S., correct?
That's just,
that doesn't count the international.
That's just domestic, correct?
Yeah, last week it knocked Finding Dory out of the number one spot.
Thank God.
Yeah. Somebody caught the fish? Wow.
They did. They caught the damn fish.
All right.
The little fish fry.
Little fish fry. So Rogue One clearly crushing it at the box office and really pretty much, I think, solidifies the idea of these Star Wars standalone movies. I mean, these things are going to, they should do very, very well for Disney. Actually, of course, we reported last week Disney, did they pass, was it $7 billion past year with a B? First studio ever to do that. So I'd say Star Wars was a pretty good investment.
So here's the thing that I think about. If you just look at box office totals, Rogue One, it has passed The Phantom Menace terms of not adjusted for inflation box office totals.
$431 million at the box office.
Yeah, and I, it, it for that as a standalone film, that has to be above, in my mind, that's above expectations from Disney.
Yeah, you know, there's a ton we can talk about. I know we're trying to move things along here and keep the energy flowing, but I will say this. After that happened, the whole reason why they had never announced the third standalone film was, or at least the excuse that we've been hearing out in the press, is that Disney wanted to see what the results were going to be from Rogue One. Now that Rogue One has made this much money, what I find interesting is now they're starting to say the standalone films are seeing more of a roadblock because will they live up to the same hype as Rogue One? Rogue One still kind of tied into the timeline of, I mean, Rogue One is technically a prequel film, a really damn good prequel film, unlike maybe three other ones that we've seen. But you're talking about solo films like the Han Solo movie, just a complete offshoot that would eventually tie back in to the films. But these fell right smack dab in the middle of the timeline. I don't know. And now I'm seeing a lot of naysayers out there saying, well, maybe because Rogue One's making so much money, it's going to make it harder for the other films coming out to pull in that type of revenue. But I mean, seriously, even if it's making $200-400 million, that's a ton of money, right? Am I right on that?
No, that it's a ton of money. And it's success is relative. I mean, I think Ant-Man is one of the lowest grossing Marvel films, but no one's going to say Ant-Man wasn't a success and that it didn't make money for Disney. I mean, they're making a sequel to it, for God's sake.
And a damn good movie, man.
Yeah, but my point is that these movies are going to have a box office up and down.
Yeah.
And if you don't allow for that, then you're incredibly self-defeating.
Mm-hmm.
I think more so than that, I think you almost have to expect a little bit of a diminishing returns factor on a lot of it, because sequels, for the most part, generally don't do as well as their predecessors. Mm-hmm. Avengers 2 didn't beat Avengers 1.
Right.
You know? All of the Star Wars movies from 1, 2, and 3, they all decreased in box office as they went along.
Box office, though. What I find very interesting about that, Greg, is if you look at the actual numbers, this is what I find really interesting about box office and box office receipts is Star Wars out the gate on May 25th, 1977 was released in limited amount of theaters. It wasn't a massive release.
And it was a different schedule for how they released movies back then too. So
absolutely. Taking that into account, it still made a pretty decent amount of money for whatever amount of, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was really low. And then they did this thing where they kind of pushed the movie out into expanded out into theaters, almost like what we see nowadays with independent films. They'll start 2 weeks prior to their main release. Star Wars started on May 25th in a very select amount of theaters, had a phenomenal weekend for being in, you know, let's say what, 50 to 100 theaters at the time. And then it expanded over the summer and it just became this phenomenon that we all love and are obviously now podcasting about. But now you look at Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi 3 years later, 3 years after that. So what was it, 1980 and 1983? Their overall weekends each outnumbered and outpowered the previous one. But the longevity of the film, of those films later on, decreased faster and made less money.
Mm-hmm.
So your sequel theory is right, but it's just funny that the popularity of the film is what drives the sequel. The initial out the gate, what they now say, I think in Box Office Mojo and a few other like box office analysis sites, is they'll say that it's that fan-driven base that comes out the first initial weekend and then it just dies off. You have these huge percentage drops from the second weekend.
Yeah.
But you can look at The Force Awakens, huge numbers that we have talked about multiple times on this podcast. You can almost look at this as not a sequel, but it's the year following that film release. Big drop-off percentage. I mean, what did that movie make? Almost $2 billion worldwide?
Yeah.
900 million something plus in the U.S. So you're talking almost a 45-50% drop compared to it. I mean, we still have some time, and what did it make? About 16-17 million out the gate this past weekend? There's a lot of analysis to go on there.
Yeah, you also have to take into account that Force Awakens coming off 13-year break between movies, 12-year break between movies.
Yeah.
And now Rogue One coming a year later. So, I mean, just huge, huge numbers for Force Awakens. Fantastic numbers for Rogue One, but, you know, not as big. My official prediction for Episode 8 when it comes out, I think we'll do on par, maybe slightly better than the Rogue One numbers, but I don't think we'll hit the Force Awakens numbers.
I agree. So here's another piece of that. The release pattern is over Christmas. And I think after Episode 8, the release pattern shifts back to May. If you're Disney, do you try to move stuff to Christmas and force other movies out of that time slot and just try to make it a Star Wars, a Christmas holiday thing for the next couple of years? Because they're doing pretty damn well in that spot.
Yeah, so what is it? Han Solo is still scheduled to be released after Episode 8 in the May following. Yeah. I think that gets pushed back.
I already think there's talks about it. I think it's already been brought up in a few websites, and I need to confirm those with those sites. But I think most of their stuff they're talking about pushing back to December, like Dave's saying.
So we did have some news out of the Han Solo movie camp. Last week, Woody Harrelson was signed to be in the young Han Solo standalone film. And when you look at this cast that they're putting together for this movie, first of all, you've got Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who wrote and directed brilliantly the Lego movie. They've got Alden Ehrenreich, who's an up-and-coming young star.
Excuse me, Alden Ehrenreich.
I'm sorry, I always mispronounce his name. Alden Ehrenreich. Donald Glover, who just cleaned up at the Golden Globes with his series Atlanta. Emilia Clarke, who is just another
Daenerys Targaryen, Game of Thrones,
cute young British girl, and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I mean, this is really shaping up to be something special.
It's a solid cast.
Yeah,
and it's got everybody but the Lego Batman in it at this point,
and working off of a Larry Kasdan script too. Yeah. I think this movie is going to be fantastic. I think this could be the best of the new Star Wars movies.
Are you calling your shot right now, Mr. Lent?
Too early to tell.
It's too early to tell that you're calling your shot, or too early to call your shot?
Is this a...
He's not the strongest opinionated man on this podcast for nothing, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, God. Wait, I've actually got something to say about that. I didn't know about the, and I'm behind on this, but the, what's her name? Amelia?
Amelia Clarke. Daenerys.
Yeah. I didn't know about her casting. I did hear about the Woody Harrelson casting. I have some issues with that. I have,
Oh, come on. Didn't you see Me Before You? She's fantastic.
Did you see Terminator Genesis?
What?
She wasn't Terminator Genesis, and it was horrible.
So. Oh,
not because of her, though. In fairness,
okay. No, you know, I have a weird conflict with the Woody Harrelson casting, and I think Woody Harrelson is an amazing, fun actor to watch. But he is one of those guys that I look at the screen and I see Woody Harrelson, and it takes me out of the moment. So that's kind of working against me on that casting. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the stuff that he is in, and I'm going to use like Zombieland as one of my best references, is one of the best damn movies ever. Just so much fun.
Wait a minute. Zombieland is one of the best movies ever?
Well, okay.
Ever?
No.
Scott is not open to hyperbole at all.
I'm not. Hang on, I've got a
Zombieland
storm coming here. I got to tweet this.
So it goes Zombieland, Godfather,
Casablanca,
Empire Strikes Back.
It is one of those fun
Corvette Summer.
It is.
In defense of Scott,
it is a fun movie.
Zombieland is a great film, and Woody Harrelson is great in it.
Yes.
Woody Harrelson for me is a guy, he's very hit or miss. He can be really good or he can be really bad. You put him in something like Zombieland and he is so good in that movie. Yeah. So good in that movie. And looking
put him
at
the Hunger Games, and he's Woody Harrelson.
But looking at the cast they're putting together for this movie, and what I'm hoping is going to be just a super fun, you know, swashbuckling script, very much in the vein of like a Zombieland, where you have, you know, an adventure with a small cast where they go out and do something fun and exciting. I think that Woody Harrelson would be perfect for a mentor to a young Han Solo rogue. A very, you know, an older rogue teaching a younger rogue the ropes, so to speak. So now, just to
build on that real quick, but correct me if I'm wrong. What, isn't it part of the now abandoned expanded universe lore that Han Solo did actually attend the Imperial Academy, much like a Biggs Darklighter for a while, dropped out? And that's where he has a lot of his training or shooting skills from or whatever?
If I remember correctly, it's not just that. He was in the Imperial Army, and what turned him to becoming disillusioned by what the Empire taught him was that he saw them massacring Wookiees, saved Chewbacca's life, and then ended up leaving the Academy or bailing out like Biggs did and becoming a pirate, basically, a space pirate. So I'm glossing over that, much like my review of Zombieland.
No, that's okay.
I just like the fact that were able to throw Space Pirate in there.
Yeah, but no, just when Greg was talking about a mentor to Han Solo, it just got me thinking, are they going to abandon that? Is that an element that they might keep around? Because it certainly makes a lot of sense for who the character is and why he's so good at military tactics and things of that nature, and just knowing, you know, things like, oh, Star Destroyers always dump their garbage before they go into hyperspace.
It would be great to see Disney hold on to some of that. I know that they've tossed all the expanded universe. We don't have to get into this argument anymore, but I will say it would be wonderful to see them hold on to some of that backstory. It would be cool. And adding, if Woody Harrelson is the pirate, that the rogue element that teaches Han Solo how to kind of be that outside of the military training, I think that actually is a really good idea.
Of course, now that I've laid down my prediction that he's going to be their mentor, watch him be like the main villain of the movie. So there you go.
Damn it. Just crushed my dreams.
And hey guys, let's pay the bills real quick. Got a shout out to our sponsor for tonight's show, Audible.com. And that's right, for you listeners of the Wretched Hive podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, so you can give the service a try. And there are over 250 Star Wars titles available, including this one. This is Star Wars Lost Stars, written by Claudia Gray. I think we talked about this book a few months ago. That's a nice finger you got there, Scott. Written by Claudia Gray and narrated by Pierce Craven. So check this out, Lost Stars.
Distracted by the promise of the spectacle they would see that day, the display of flying power and flying techniques by vessels of the Imperial fleet. Or maybe Dalvin was embarrassed because he'd realized Thane had identified the ship when he couldn't. He says he's going to the Imperial Academy, Thane thought, but that's just because he thinks it will make him important. Dalvin doesn't know every single ship like I do. He doesn't study the manuals or practice with a glider. Dalvin will never be a real pilot.
So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E, like wretched hive. Again, that's audibletrial.com/hive for your free audiobook download. Do it now.
Do you know if Random House or Audible, whoever was in charge of hiring the readers for that audiobook, if they had to, if they were violating any child labor laws by hiring a 12-year-old to read that thing? I'm just curious. Was it recorded in China, maybe?
I don't have that in front of me. I'm sorry.
We'll put our I-team investigative report on it.
Great, Greg. Some kid some guy who hasn't had his balls drop yet is going to be crying listening to our podcast because you're making fun of him, man.
Can you imagine that guy today? Because he's probably all of like 14 now, so he's probably just hitting puberty and just at his most sensitive stage. He's like, why are they picking on me, man? I'm going to go and hashtag some tweets on my Instagrams about that old fart, man.
We've got top men looking into it right now.
Ooh?
Top men. All right, let's talk about some more news. Here we go.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, guys, we're 330 days away from Episode 8. And I know that because I found a webpage that is counting this down. It's if you've ever seen these, it's we should post this link on our Facebook page, Scott. But it's days.2/until/Star Wars 8 Episode 8, and it's just a page that counts down every day. So right now it's 330 days, 1 hour 25 minutes until Star Wars Episode 8.
Yeah. The last time...
Steve? Oh, sorry, Dave.
Sorry, I was going to say, the last time I visited a webpage like that, it was back in the 90s, and it was the Natalie Portman Countdown to Legality clock.
God, we all just sound like the dirtiest of old men.
Man,
tonight.
We
oh
really
God.
Do. Tonight? Tonight?
What did you do on your podcast? We talked about Stargirls and burlesque and Natalie Portman before she was 18.
It was one of my first realizations that the internet was a dark and creepy place.
We made fun of youngsters and talked about the way they used to do things when I was young.
Well, we did start with Star Wars burlesque. I mean, you know, it's kind of gone downhill from there. But Rian Johnson has been in the news talking about plot points of Episode 8, and he's actually talked a lot about this in Variety.com, story titled Star Wars Episode 8 Director Rian Johnson Teases Details of Sequel. Rian Johnson is quoted here, "I want it to be a blast and to be funny and to be a ride the way that The Force Awakens and the original Star Wars movies were," Johnson said. He goes on to talk about how he wanted to display the motivations of Rey, Finn, and Poe. He says, "I wanted to know more about each of them, and that doesn't just mean information or backstory," Johnson said. "Figure out what's the most difficult thing of each of them. Figure out what's the most difficult thing each of them could be challenged with now. Let's throw that at them and dig into really what makes them tick by seeing how they handle that." In addition, he mentioned that it's sort of a coming-of-age movie for Rey. It very much feels like what we all go through in adolescence, he says, the dawning of this new chapter in our lives. So sort of a coming-of-age movie for these characters. He wants it to be a good time, and... he says, "It meant so much to me as a kid. The creative work has felt like play." So again, I'll just say it's so cool to have guys our age that are Star Wars fans making Star Wars.
So what you're saying by this interview here is that we're going to have the Breakfast Club of Star Wars movies? Is that what? Just bury your head in the sand, Claire.
In Excess is going to be on the soundtrack. It's going to be awesome.
Don't you forget about me. Coming of age Star Wars movie. Perfect. Speaking of Episode 8, we did have a potential spoiler of the title. And now I lost my link. Did you guys happen to see this? Oh, here it is. Independent.co.uk reporting that Disney has reserved the URL Star Wars Forces of Destiny. Star Wars Forces of Destiny. So the talk is, well, What is this, some sort of a game? Or maybe it's this, it's the title of episode 8.
It really sounds more like a game. I have nothing to base this on, but it sounds more like a game. I don't know if that really inspires me as a title of a Star Wars movie or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Force Awakens was so fitting. You know, it's the rebirth of the franchise. It's the, it's, you know, new things happening, you know, for the characters themselves. Forces of Destiny. It's very video gamey. Call of Duty, Forces of Destiny.
Or Lifetime Movie of the Week E.
Yeah.
I agree. It sounds like a board game, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Forces of Destiny.
Do not mock my board game addiction.
Ooh, a collectible card game.
I have a bunch of those too.
I do too. Someday we'll have to get them out of storage and cross the streams.
We don't cross the stream. We have talked about having a game night. We need to do that with some of these Star Wars games and podcast that.
I was with you in board games, but I'm not going on the card game thing. I can't do those. I did just
drop about $40 or so on the new Star Wars card/dice game that just came out from Fantasy Flight Games, Star Wars Destiny. Super popular, very hard to get amongst the gaming people. But it's a fun little game. Played it with my son, had a good time with it.
So I have to sidebar quick for an important question. Scott, what is the distinction you're drawing between a board game and a collectible card game?
You're talking collectible card game. You're talking like Magic and all those types, right?
Yes, sir.
Just never got into it. Just never got the Pokemon thing. I tried to do that with my son and collect some cards, get into all that stuff, but I just couldn't do it. Supported him, but I don't know. Just
so Pogs are out too, I'm guessing.
Now you just kill him.
We are really flashing back to the 90s right now. We really are.
We really
are. I'm gonna go put on my flannel. I'm gonna grow my hair out and
put on the Pearl Jam.
Exactly. Pearl Jam. Jeremy spoke in class again today.
But yeah, I agree with Greg. It sounds like a game title. It doesn't sound like a movie title. I mean, yeah. That would be the least exciting movie title since The Phantom Menace, if that really was. Because everything else just has something kind of action-y going on in it. You know, The Empire Strikes Back. It's the return of the Jedi.
Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, yeah. Shitty movie, but action title.
You know, that movie, there's some great stuff in that movie. It just happens to also harbor the worst dialogue scenes ever in that trilogy. I mean, horrible stuff. I did want to point this out. Dave, you mentioned The Phantom Menace, and I actually watched The Phantom Menace, two versions of it, in the past 7 days.
Was one on VHS.
What I ended up doing was my son had asked me about, there was a bootleg available back in, I believe, the 90s, early 2000s, called The Phantom Edit. And this editor guy came in and edited out quite a bit of the Jar Jar Binks and Anakin scenes and a few other long, drawn-out moments in that film, which actually made that movie a lot better. However, rewatching that, even the Phantom Edit, I am going to go back on the record and say, what a stinking pile of steaming crap that movie is. It hurt to watch that film. It's so bad, I thought maybe it was just the bad copy I had on DVD that I had burned or ripped from the internet. I went and rewatched the VHS, pulled that out, and then put in the DVD version and still felt, oh my God, this is unbelievable. So that's my little sidebar.
Still better than Return of the Jedi.
Nope. Nope. You were
now you're just trolling.
So wrong.
Not wrong at all.
I'm with you though, Scott. I watched The Phantom Edit over a year now. But and I remember being disappointed. You know, it was better in my mind than it was in reality.
It is better than The Phantom Menace, but it is still a piece of steaming crap. pile of crap. Attack of the Edit, however, still a bad movie. Great editing in that version of the film. If you ever get a chance to see Attack of the Edit, please watch it.
Yeah. Now, guys, speaking about Episode 8, this is something that that we need to cover here, and it has to do with Carrie Fisher. Folks are starting to, you know, in the wake of her passing and her mother's passing, folks are starting to think about the implications to the Star Wars universe, and I wanted just to cover a couple of stories on this. You know, Disney has some decisions to make now. What do they do with this character? Obviously, they've got Episode 8 in the can. It's you know, they filmed this thing. It's all of her scenes are shot. All of the pre-production is done. All of the preliminary shooting is done. And they have decisions to make in terms of what to do with the Princess Leia character. Now, Disney executives have already been on record saying, look, we're not going to create a CGI Leia, a general Leia CGI. It's just not going to happen. In fact, in Rolling Stone, they came out and said, quote, "We don't normally respond to fan press or speculation, but there is a rumor circulating that we would like to address," Lucasfilm wrote on the official Star Wars site. "We want to assure our fans that Lucasfilm has no plans to digitally recreate Carrie Fisher's performance as Princess or General Leia Organa." So the CGI possibility, you know, it's just not, it's not a possibility. So what do you do with this character? Do you rewrite the end of Episode 8 so that she doesn't survive the end of that movie? Do you write her into some sort of different storyline for Episode 9? Because apparently there are other accounts that suggest that she was, Carrie Fisher's character, Princess Leia, was going to play a huge role in Episode 9. So they're rethinking that script as well. So I just want to talk about this because it's a little bit close to her passing, but I think it's newsworthy because it's out there and people are starting to speculate a little bit. So
there's one thing that I want to hone in on,
yep,
on that statement, which is the choice of verbiage. They did not say, and they could have chosen to say, Lucasfilm will not do a CGI recreation of Princess Leia. What the statement says is that Lucasfilm has no plans, which the politician in me says that means that at the moment that you are writing that statement, you have no plans, and therefore it is a 100% truthful statement that you can justify on the record. But in 3 weeks, you could have a story meeting where they come in and say, hey, we cracked the code, we know how to do it, and now you will have plans. Hmm. So I think Lucasfilm did a great job of tamping down some honestly inappropriate speculation that's going on right now, because none of us obviously know what the plot of the movie is, and they have very, very serious decisions to make, and I will wager that they don't even know what they're going to do at this point. Mm-hmm. They still don't know what they're going to do, because you have a lot of people over there with heavy personal attachments who are still working through their grief, and they don't have to decide it right at this second, but in the next couple of weeks they have to make some firm decisions so Episode 8 will line up. And if it were me, I don't know that I would try to kill her off at the end of Episode 8, but I would try to set something up so that there could be an off-camera death in Episode 9, so that there could be some closure that fans could say goodbye to that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the politician in you is, I think, correct. I think the way that they worded that, they leave it open ended, and I think it's fine that they did that. I think it's a polite way of basically saying we are going to try and respect Carrie Fisher and her estate and everything involved in this movie. We obviously don't know; it's all speculation at this point where it's going to go. It does give them the chance to say if things do progress. I still think the stuff that happened in Rogue One, the CGI characters, as much as we kind of ripped on them a little bit here and there, the Tarkin and the Princess Leia, I don't feel I need to say spoilers at this point. If you haven't seen it, what the hell is your problem? But, you know, if they want to do something,
why are you listening to a Star Wars podcast if you haven't?
Seriously.
Yes. Yeah. You should not listen to Star Wars podcasts at this point if you haven't seen Rogue One. You're not a fan.
Take a month or two off. Don't listen to a podcast and get out and actually see a movie. But
guys, my name's George Schmookish, and I really haven't seen the movie, but I love to listen to Star Wars podcasts all the time. Just saying.
Thanks, Mr. Spookus. No, I think if they leave it open enough that if they can do something, whether it be off camera, even a small tiny cameo, we don't know where that character is going to go. But if it does happen that she needs to be in episode 9, I think they can find a proper way of doing it. And even, like you mentioned, Dave, an off-screen death, I think they could still even do it on screen and still feel respectable to her and her estate.
I don't know that I even really see the need to kill her off. And I'm just asking hypothetically. I mean, is that too callous? I don't know. I really, and it's going to sound kind of funny, but look at how they treated the death of Paul Walker in the Fast and the Furious movies. They didn't kill off his character. They didn't need to give him a hero's death because he died in real life, and they treated it with respect. And he made an exit from the movies, and he won't be back as a character in the next one that comes out. You know, I don't know. I almost think that killing off the character of Princess Leia would be a little too callous. I'm really sad, actually, that there's so many of the unresolved storylines. You know, she doesn't get the resolution with her son. I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to set that up in episode 8. I would imagine that would have been a big payoff in episode 9, and now you won't get that. And that actually makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you have to kill off the character. I almost would rather, personally, that they did not kill off the character. But by that same token, I don't want it to be like a Three's Company moment where they're like, you know, talking to Princess Leia. Hey, I've got Princess Leia on the phone, and she says this, guys. You know, I don't really want to see that kind of moment either. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I'd like to see that go. I really don't think I would like to see them kill her off, though, personally.
By the way, nice poll on the Three's Company reference.
Thank you.
Talking about Chrissy, right, with the cousin and all that?
Yes, exactly. Oh, man,
that was bad.
I was always a Janet guy myself, I got to say.
I see your point, Greg. They don't have to kill her off. The only reason I mention that is, I don't know, they felt the need to kill off Han, and I know there's all sorts of speculation with Harrison Ford and wanting to be out of the movie franchise and whatnot, but the fact that she's a general and she is kind of leading this new revolution, kind of like the old rebellion, could lend itself to that moment. Like, she is a general. She could be put in a position where her character does get killed off. So that's all I was just trying to say. She could survive it, you know, and maybe just go on living her life and everything's fine. But again, speculation. We don't know. So,
well, and if you kill off that character, you limit yourself to be able to do a CGI reproduction later, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the other part of the quote that I did not read here from Rolling Stone is that the BBC Newsnight report, which is where this rumor was emanating from, also suggested that Disney, which owns Lucasfilm, is already negotiating with Fisher's estate for the continued use of her image in future films. However, Lucasfilm strongly denied that rumor in Friday's statement, saying, quote, Carrie Fisher was, is, and will always be a part of the Lucasfilm family. They continued, she was our princess, our general, and more importantly, our friend. We are still hurting from her loss. We cherish her memory and legacy as Princess Leia and will always strive to honor everything she gave to Star Wars.
Again, I'm going to pull a Dave Potter right here. Don't call me Harry Potter on this. That's the politician in them saying that. We have known for years because Carrie Fisher has gone on record as saying that George Lucas owns the likeness of her entire physique, her body, her face, everything. we know that they can do whatever they want with that character. So that's a nice way of saying, hey, we're going to respect her, you know, her as a person and her entire estate, family, you name it. I can't honestly say I believe them 100% because they own the likeness of Princess Leia. Mm-hmm. So if she's a Pez dispenser and she's a shampoo bottle and all those, oh, by the way, Dave, thank you for the call out. We did watch the special with her and it was fucking fantastic. She is awesome.
Now, what special was that? That was the SNL.
No, she did a stand-up. Was it for HBO, I believe?
Wishful Drinking.
Wishful Drinking. See it if you haven't. It is so funny and so good. She is an amazing, amazing woman. Funnier than hell.
Yeah, I saw that a couple years back, and it's really good. It touches, you know... there's moments that she touches on Star Wars. It's out of the hour long, it's maybe like 5, maybe 10 minutes that she talks about Star Wars in it. Yes. But the rest of it is so funny, so entertaining. She's such a witty person and just,
yes,
you know, you could listen to her talk for hours. You really could.
I really could. She was a great person to listen to. I will bring this up because we're a Star Wars podcast.
A raconteur, if you will, a great storyteller.
Yes. Her Star Wars moments are wonderful. She does sport the cinnamon buns through the special at some point. She does make a couple cracks as to if you are watching this and you're not a Star Wars fan, why the hell are you even here? There was another couple moments where she does break down Hollywood and how Hollywood and families and marriages kind of work, and that is worth the price of admission alone. She charts the entire history of how Hollywood couples get together, have kids, and end up marrying everybody else in the entire industry. It is brilliant. She's a wonderful, wonderful speaker.
Did anybody watch the Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds, Bright Lights documentary that was on HBO? That aired early, didn't it?
Yeah, I have not seen it yet. I have HBO Go, so we'll... Christine and I will catch that, you know, at our leisure here in the next week or two. But we did dial into the rebroadcast, the edited down rebroadcast of the Carrie Fisher Saturday Night Live episode from back in 78 or 79. And one of the skits that we saw was the loud family, the family that just shouts all the time. And and Christine, we were both just leaning forward on the couch, just kind of staring at the TV with our mouths kind of open. And we're watching this skit with, you know, a young Bill Murray, a young Jim Belushi, a young Gilda Radner, a young Carrie Fisher. And Christine just very quietly and reverentially is like, just look at the star power that is on that stage right now.
Yeah.
And it was, it's a silly, silly skit, but it was so breathtaking to watch that and just still feel that energy 40 years later.
Minor correction, that's John Belushi that was the
what did I say?
I remember you said Jim Belushi.
Oh, my bad, sorry.
Yeah. Jim Belushi, the still living, unfunny one, John Belushi.
But decent singer.
Unfortunately passed. And extremely funny one was John Belushi, who was on
John Saturday. Belushi.
And if I did my research right while I was watching it, that episode was before Carrie Fisher was dating Dan Aykroyd.
Was that where they met originally?
They met on the Blues Brothers movie. And the Blues Brothers movie, if I did this right, was about 18 months after that episode of SNL.
Such a great part. Such a great movie. But yeah, having her in there as the... what, vengeful, gun-toting ex-girlfriend?
I just love how every time you see her, up until the last time when she talks, but every time you see her, her arsenal of weapons just gets crazier and crazier and crazier.
One of the best scenes is when she blows up the she's got the bazooka out of the car. She blows up the brick building and it totally comes down and they just kind of get up and dust themselves off in their black suits and keep going, you know. So funny. Great, great movie. Dave, you mentioned wanting to give an opportunity for the fans to sort of recognize and honor her. And we had a story here that I wanted to mention quickly. that reminded me something out of the novel Ready Player One. I know that's one of our favorites. And this is fans who play Star Wars The Old Republic, MMO game, visited, all flocked to House Organa on Alderaan with their characters to pay honor to Carrie Fisher and to Princess Leia. So I just thought that was really cool. Players going online, all going to the same place in the universe to sort of pay their respects.
Now, did anyone go to the Downtown Disney lightsaber tribute to her by chance? Did any one of us head down there? I'm not sure. I didn't talk with you guys about this ahead of time.
No, I didn't hear about that at all.
Yeah, there was a big collection. I think it was the night or a couple nights after she had passed. Yeah, there was a very, very large gathering of fans at Downtown Disney. Lots of pictures of it online. Yeah, it's very, very neat.
Cool.
Did not go.
All right. Not so neat that any of us went, apparently.
Well, Anaheim's a long way away. It's at least a 20-minute drive.
Oh, God.
And it was raining, so what are you going to do?
Yes, and for folks that don't live in Southern California, the fact that it's been raining more often than not for the past 30 days has just completely blown all of our minds and is greatly and negatively impacting our lifestyle at this point.
It is a freak out city right now, I gotta tell you.
I take the train to work every day, and the trains are even delayed when it rains. I don't understand. You know, like the let me just digress here. The LA, I'm so annoyed by this. The LA metro system is built to run when it's 72 and sunny. When it's 80
only,
or when
only.
It's 60, you know, any variation from 72 and sunny, everything just slams to a screeching halt.
So basically anyway. 363 days out of the year, right. And something changes and they have a complete meltdown and can't figure it out.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, well, Go ahead.
I will say it's extremely funny how the whole state has been complaining. We've been the butt of jokes for 5 years now about how bad the drought is out here in California. We get a week's worth of rain and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, was this too much water? Okay. We're like, what the hell is all this? We can't have all this water here.
I just have to say, if there's anybody out there listening to this in Seattle, I do not know how you do it. And kudos to you.
Suddenly Los Angeles is Camino, right?
Yeah.
If we gauge it out here in Southern California, it's not bad until Malibu is sliding into the ocean. Then things are bad. That's how we work it, okay?
I just really liked it better when we were stealing all of our water from Northern California.
Well, talking about stealing something from Northern California.
Whoa, what a segue!
Nice!
George Lucas is opening his billion-dollar museum, the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, in beautiful downtown Los Angeles. It's happening, folks.
I didn't want to put it in Northern California anyway. Hate that place.
They didn't let me build it. I'm taking it down to L.A. Damn it.
Well, I need to do a small correction on that, Steve. All it's right. Just south of downtown L.A. near USC's campus.
Oh, come on. That's downtown L.A.
I know. there might be some fans who call you on that. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
There might be some people on the podcast that'll call you on that.
All right, fine. Well, very close to downtown Los Angeles.
Yes. It's immediately south of the USC campus. Literally immediately south.
Yeah.
This is at Forbes.com. George Lucas, Star Wars creator, to open to open $1 billion museum in Los Angeles. The Force was with L.A. on this one. Though the battle may not have quite the drama of The Empire versus the Rebels, the foundation of Star Wars creator George Lucas announced it would build the $1 billion Lucas Museum of Narrative Art in Los Angeles instead of rival San Francisco. Take that, Giants fans!
Yeah, screw you, Giants!
Barry Bonds still not in the Hall of Fame, and you get no museum.
That's right. They and Lucas actually, of course, we've covered this on the show previously. Tried to move it to Chicago, where his his wife Melanie hails from.
Yes.
That did not work out.
And let me just say, thank you, ignorant throwback Chicagoans who blocked it from being built there. Thank you so very, very much.
Friends of the parks, I think.
At least they still have that parking lot. Thank God they still have that parking lot. Bears fans, rejoice.
Well, little did we know, friends of the parks were actually friends of Los Angeles. So that's great.
Sweet.
Yeah, so this is happening. The new museum will be between 265,000 and 275,000 square feet, including up to 100,000 square feet of gallery space, right in the heart of South LA, next to the California Science Center.
Museum of Natural History.
I was going to say the Natural History Museum is the space where they have the Endeavor is that part of the Science Museum?
Right, the Space Shuttle is down there. There's also an African American History Museum down there.
Yes.
Oh, and a little place called the Coliseum as well.
Coliseum right there.
Yep, it's going to be fantastic.
Seriously, if you were thinking about coming to visit LA, you need to stop. When this is completed, you need to visit. You need to stop there because you have multiple museums. You have the Coliseum. It is an amazing area to check out some really cool stuff. And by the looks of it, Steve, it looks actually like Queen Amidala's ship.
It does.
It's amazing with the design on this thing.
Well, it's a hell of a lot more interesting than the Chargers coming to LA. That's all I have to say.
That's very true. Very true.
And San Francisco, not only losing the museum, losing the Raiders too. Take that, suck it, NoCal.
Oh man. Well, I call it right now. Radio remote, people.
Okay, I've got a few.
It's happening.
I've got a few friends that are actually NorCal fans and listeners. So sorry, guys. Love you, but suck it.
But totally suck it. No, but in all seriousness, though, we're going to have the George Lucas Museum and we're going to have Star Wars Land at Disneyland.
Oh, yes.
Opening. Okay. When is that?
How great is it to be alive and living in Southern California right now?
And we're going to steal your water.
Oh, man. No doubt. Well, it's the golden era of Star Wars, folks. It really is.
You can't see it, but I'm twirling my mustachioed face right now. I'm twirling it.
Anybody who's not a Californian is just wondering what the hell we're talking about, but just trust us, it's hilarious.
And if you're from Northern California, suck it!
Oh, my God.
Guys, we've got one last story to cover. Maybe the biggest story of which is in a big month of January for lots of Star Wars news. this is bigger than the George Lucas Museum, Rogue One combined, I really think.
That's saying a lot.
That's saying a lot. Yep, it sure is, and it's not hyperbolous at all.
Let's talk about this baby then.
From HuffingtonPost.com.
Trusted news source.
Yep.
HuffPo.
Mom wears Chewbacca mask during labor. That's right. A mother, I'm going to quote from the story. One thing you might not expect from an expectant mom is her wearing a Chewbacca mask during labor. That's what Katie Stricker Curtis did earlier this week while giving birth to her son, Jaden.
Son of a bitch. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding? I could not make this up. gave birth to her son, Jaden.
Spelled. That's all I want to know.
We have a clip. This is Katie Stricker Curtis giving birth to her son, Jaden. Here we go.
I don't mind.
All right. what you can now I'm going to play that again. Now listen carefully in the background. You can hear the fetal monitor. That's the heartbeat of the baby. Ba-dump, 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 ba-dump. And then she's holding her stomach. You can't see the video, but she's, you know, clearly having a contraction. And she's wearing a Chewbacca mask. So here we go. Try this. Scott Ivanski, your reaction.
I couldn't hear it, so I'm going to just tell you this. What in the hell is wrong with America? That's what I have to say.
In all fairness, this is not Candace Payne Chewbacca Mom, who we all come to know and loathe. This is somebody else Chewbacca Mom. What was her name? Katie Stricker Curtis.
Yes.
Who and her lovely, lovely husband had the foresight as they were leaving for the hospital to birth a new human being into this world. Wait a minute. Don't forget the Chewbacca mask.
Okay. I don't know what's more painful. The fact that this family, their son's name, it is a son, right? Is that what it is?
Jaden. Yes.
His Jayden. Name is Jaden. Okay.
J-A-Y-D-E-N.
Okay, see, so that right there tells me how wrong they are, okay? to take my son's name in vain and bastardize this whole thing by putting a seriously, this is going to go on. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm done.
She says, just because I'm a mom doesn't mean I have to grow up. Never take life too seriously. Best Christmas gift ever.
Oh, okay. That's sweet. That's nice.
What is up with the hashtag pregnancy hair growth, though? That sounds really disturbing.
I think she's referring to the Chewbacca-like hair in the mask, but yeah. Could be something
else. There's hair in the mask? I didn't remember that when I put that damn mask on. There's hair?
No, there's not hair on it.
Yeah, I know. I hope not. Something.
God, if there's hair on yours, please take it back immediately.
Yeah. That's a wookie.
I think there's hair down there is what she's saying.
Oh.
It's the very lonely Luke tweet of the week.
Red 5 standing by.
Because if there's something to whine about, you can count on Luke.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Even though he's now an old man.
No!
It just isn't fair.
Man, I just threw up in my mouth a little bit when you mentioned that hair comment. I really, really... Okay, moving on. So, it's been a few weeks since we visited Very Lonely Luke. It's been a couple weeks. We had Rogue One come out, and I think we'd skipped a week previous too. So it's good to catch up with the old VLL and find out what he's up to. And from the 14th of January, so still very recently here. I thought this was appropriate considering that today is Inauguration Day. It says, from Very Lonely Luke, my dad and I finally bonded when he killed the Emperor. If only we had more time, we could have found more old people to throw down pits.
That is awesome. Oh my God, that's awesome!
And with the current administration shaping up the way it is, I think we're all going to be wanting to throw some people down some pits here very soon.
I think that's Trump's healthcare plan.
There was a celebrity that tweeted out today that something like, now that Lex Luthor is becoming president, maybe Superman will show up, something like that.
Oh my God! Oh, the jokes are going to be so awesome.
Oh my God, we didn't even touch on Trumpster, did we?
The Trumpster.
Yeah, you're right. No, we did not.
Can we say something? Can we talk about this now?
God bless Mark Hamill and his Twitter feed.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mark Hamill.
Thank you. Now that Carrie Fisher, God rest her soul, has left this mortal coil, picking up the slack and becoming the national treasure is now Mark Hamill, who has taken to reading Donald Trump tweets while portraying his character from the Batman series, of course, the Jokester, and dubbing him the Trumpster. They are a little bit of magic.
Oh, beautiful.
Can you cue one up real quick, Steve?
I am working on it. All right, so now.
Scott, tell us how you discovered this.
I stumbled across it through a news article, and I just had to go check it out to see if it was actually real. And sure enough, it was the New Year's Eve tweet, which was amazing. And it was left vague. It was open. I didn't know if it was going to continue. I just knew that I had a gem right in front of me, and I think I shared it out there. Whether you like Trump or not, this isn't trying to pick on anybody, but Mark Hamill as the Joker is amazing. We all know that. We all love that. But portraying him reading Trump tweets is just magic. It's so magical. And if you guys haven't heard it, he's done, what, 3-4 of them now?
And I've only heard 2, but it could be up to that many. I don't know for sure.
Oh, yeah. He did after the New Year's Eve. We have the Meryl Streep tweet, which is amazing. And then you now have the John Lewis civil rights activist, current U.S. senator tweet, which is still, oh, Mark Hamill, you are a beautiful, beautiful man. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, without getting too political on a Star Wars podcast, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous to do that. But it is amazing how how well the words of Donald Trump come out of the Joker's mouth.
It's true. It's really true.
All right, guys, I have one here. This is quote number 1. Let me see if this will play here.
Happy New Year to all, including to my many enemies and those who have fought me and lost so badly. They just don't know what to do. Love.
Come on.
Wait.
He's so awesome. That is entertainment.
Oh, when, my God.
When you hear him talk about the John Lewis one, it's so there's a moment where Trump says something where he says, all talk, talk, talk. And the way Mark Hamill does that is just genius. You know that's why he was chosen to be the Joker. He not just got the little nuances and the inflection and the tone and everything. It was that right there. It was just that's what sold it 25 years ago, whenever that started. It was just brilliant.
So good.
These are go ahead. I'm sorry.
I know we're looking to wrap the show up here, but one more quick plug. Required listening for not just my fellow co-host of The Wretched Hive, for anybody who might be listening to this podcast, check out Chris Hardwick's Nerdist podcast. He just had an hour-plus-long conversation with Mark Hamill within the past week. I don't have the episode number, unfortunately. Great, great conversation with Mark Hamill. Recorded just prior to Carrie Fisher's death, so it's not touched on at all in the podcast, but just fantastic words about his hobbies, about his show that's on the Comic-Con network, on the internet, and about the audition process he went through on Star Wars back in 1976. Great, great listen. Well worth an hour of your time. Go out and do it. The Nerdist.
Mark Hamill is so engaging no matter what he does. He's just a fan, just a great storyteller, and he likes to talk, and he's just so entertaining to listen to. I love listening to Mark Hamill. It's great.
Steve, by the way, I know we're wrapping it up here, but I do want to say I am trying to put together at least some sort of a soundtrack, possible downloads of the music that we heard from the Star Wars Girls Burlesque show. There were some great Star Wars themed remixes, so to speak. Mm. plus the Mako, if you're familiar with Mako 1978 disco album. I am trying to throw some of that together.
Galactic Funk and Other Hits.
So good.
So good.
So good.
All right, here we go.
Did anybody check out the old Headspace album? Am I the only one who listened to that thing? Am I the only one with the rave culture in me? Maybe if Nico was on the podcast tonight, maybe he would have heard a track or two off of it.
No, we actually we played it earlier this year on the show.
We did previews of the clips before the album was released. I remember that. But did anybody ever listen to the whole thing?
I have not listened to the whole thing.
Oh, I got to get you guys to listen to the whole thing. It will completely blow your hair back. Yeah, it is. It is just. I don't know if I mean that in a good way or not, but it is.
Hey, great.
Here we go. One more Trumpster here.
Congressman right. John Lewis should spend more time on fixing and helping his district, which is in horrible shape and falling apart, not to mention crime-infested, rather than falsely complaining about the election results. All talk, talk, talk. No action or results. Sad. Congressman John Lewis should finally focus on the burning and crime-infested inner cities of the U.S. I can use all the help I can get.
We gotta close on that.
Yes, we do.
Well, I thought I'd never say it, but man, Star Wars boobies.
Star Wars and boobies go together, actually. We discovered, didn't we?
We did. Damn, I had a good time that night. That was fun, man.
That was a blast. It was good to hang out outside of the show and, you know, outside of real life for a little bit. It was fun.
I will never look at, seriously, a lightsaber and Luke Skywalker the same way ever again.
Orlando.
Orlando. Damn you.
Orlando. Well, if you want to tell us about your boobie in Star Wars moments, we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a voicemail. 562-455-4483. That's 562-45-HIVE. 455-HIVE. Sorry, I got ahead of myself there. You can also email us, wretchedhive@yahoo.com. Of course, we always mention our Facebook page, facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast. You can tweet us at wretchhivepod. Maybe the best way to connect with us is through iTunes, though. Go to iTunes, go to your podcast section, search up the Wretched Hive Podcast. We'll be the first one that comes up. Subscribe to the show, leave a review. 5 stars, 1 star, any stars, we don't care. We just want to hear from you, fans of the Wretched Hive. And guys, final thoughts for this week's show.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it's the 1 year anniversary. I've been amused looking at those Facebook 1 year ago things of the photos of the night, that conversation that really spawned, you know, having this happen. That night we just texted Scott about 118 random Star Wars quotes non-sequentially because he wasn't out with us.
I remember that.
That's right. Happy anniversary, guys. We made it a year. Here's to several more. We're gonna have a lot of Star Wars to talk about, that's for sure.
Cheers, you wonderful bastards. I'm so happy we're doing this. This is such a good time.
328 short days away from episode 8. Give me your money.
Yes. Take my money.
We gotta figure out how to get a percentage of that, by the way. Guys, have a great week. May the Force be with us all.